think your supplement is clean. If it says this, you may want to think again. Welcome back to The Wellnest, the Hub Nutrition Feel Good podcast. I'm here with Sarah Greenfield.
Hello, happy to be here.
Today's topic will get us into hot waters, I would say. There's a lot to talk about, number one. For some, a controversial topic, while I don't think it should be. I feel very passionate about this topic. When we created Hum, we really had three pillars around which we created the brand. One is being clinical, so making sure everything we do is science-based and there is science and human trials to justify any claim or any formulations that we do. And number two, clean ingredients, because it's not just about what is in the product, but also what you formulate without. And I always think, like, why, when in doubt, keep it out. And it is a very, very controversial topic for many because they are very different philosophies. And I think today what we're going to cover is clean ingredients, standards, Prop 65. But let's really get into this one here. And, like, let's start, like, what clean actually means, what it is, and how one can really quickly sniff out whether the product you're holding your hand, you're trying to decipher the label, is clean. So Sarah, why don't we get started here, and maybe we get on with your perspective as well around it. Like, how do you feel about clean foods?
Yeah, and I think we're going to have interesting perspectives because, I mean, we both look at supplements. You're coming from a supplement world. I'm also looking at foods and products that people are putting on their bodies just as a registered dietitian supporting people in their healing journey. So I'm excited to unpack this with you. And I actually remember, just to give everyone context, having a lot of conversations with you when we worked really closely on product development about this topic and what does it mean to be clean and how do we hold this product to high standards and how do we not put this kind of crappy ingredient in it just because we want it to look a certain way, but really utilizing natural things. So I just want to give that perspective because I've worked with you behind closed doors deeply on products. And it's always been something that I think has been really on the forefront and in our conversations.
Yeah. So I
just wanted to kind of highlight that because it's important when we're talking about things that we're putting in our bodies.
100%. And look, and I think the challenge is that the word clean is not, there is no legal definition around clean. So what can you do as a brand, for example? And even before I go there, maybe I want to speak a little bit about, like, our philosophy. And, you know, like, when you come in from to an industry from the outside, you want to learn everything. So you typically question everything that the industry does. And what you learn is, like, there are ingredients that are in products, for example, titanium dioxide, which we banned from day one, and I explain in a second why, that are meant to make the look pills whiter or the capsules whiter, and then you can put color on top and make them more marketable, if you will. And I was like, why are we even including this? And I was like, oh, no, well, it's safe. But, like, I was like, no, like, this is an ingredient that's in the formulation for pure marketing purposes. So we don't want this in our formulas, right? And now, actually, it's an ingredient that's being banned. It's been banned in Europe a couple of years ago. We've banned it, like, in 2012 from day one, basically. So we're really proud of that, right? Because we had a question about it, and there was some science about, like, titanium dioxide causing cancer formations in mice, right? You can always make the argument, these are mice, it's not a human being. But that was a really questionable piece of science that we had in front of us. We're like, absolutely not, we cannot formulate with this. Yeah. The good news is there are organizations out there that can actually help brands, like the Clean Label Project, to assist them in making decisions when it comes to formulas, but also holding them accountable when it comes to product testing. So what they do is they go around with mystery shoppers and they pull product from the shelf and then they send it to their own labs and they test for, like, hundreds of contaminants, basically, and make sure certain levels are not exceeded. It's a great organization and we work with them very closely. And the reason we do work with them closely is because they do hold us accountable. And we found that a really good way of, like, partnering with external bodies that don't have that bias that you typically do as that you have as a brand. So I think that's important. But let's start with the label, right? Like, how can one decipher? So I spoke already to the Clean Label Project, but, like, are there any other ways of, like, understanding, is this product actually clean? And let's start with the label.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of person, you know, I grab a product, turn it around. The first thing I do is, like, I don't care about the front of pack. I flip it around and read the ingredient list, and I read also the other ingredient list. What's your perspective here?
Yeah, well, I mean, the other ingredient list is where you're going to find the gold, and really looking at what am I putting in my body and do I know what it is? I think that's always kind of the best place to start, is like, when you're looking at a food, do I know what this food is? Can I pronounce it? And if you can't pronounce it and you don't know what it actually is, put it back and look for a cleaner option. So when I say clean, I'm saying like, can you see that your food contains food, like period, and not all of these other stabilizers and preservatives and just chemicals and colors? We just want to be ingesting food. And there's many brands that are out on the market now that didn't exist 10 years ago that really kind of prioritize that. When you get to supplements, it's a little bit more challenging because there are different things that are in there that, you know, are hard to pronounce, but there's certain things, like when we're looking like titanium dioxide, certain like magnesium stearate is something I don't typically like to see in a supplement. Food dye, like, you know, any of those colorings that aren't natural. Again, that to me is not clean. Clean is simple. And can you say like where that came from? That's kind of how I identify clean.
Yeah. And I think it's, when you look at the ingredient list, you want to make sure that the other ingredient list is fairly short, I would say.
Yeah.
And if you can't pronounce something or don't understand an ingredient, I would just encourage people to look it up. In fact, 79% of consumers say clean ingredients are important when choosing supplements. That's from a 2023 McKinsey study. And on an annual basis, the search term clean vitamins on Google has been rising by 35% year over year. So that's, you know, the consumer are definitely interested in the topic. And I do encourage everyone just to really make sure. And this is another thing, you will notice this specifically in the vitamin world. And I'm, you know, really, the first thing I do is when I look at products that are out there, because obviously there's so many products out there, you go to the product detail page and you find the label, the back label.
Ah,
it's simple as that.
Absolutely.
But you won't believe how hard it is to actually find, for many,
totally,
many brands,
yeah,
the back label with the other ingredients. Yeah. It's just really fascinating to me. And I think that's probably a red flag. Another red flag I would look out for is what's the so-called Prop 65 warning. Why this matters. Prop 65 was, when was this? It's part of the Safe Drinking Water and Toxic Enforcement Act of California, 1986. It basically looks at common contaminants like mercury and heavy metals, for example, that you can find in foods. And it looks at levels of those. And if your product exceeds them by serving, then you need to put a warning label on your packaging. And the warning says this product contains a chemical known to the state of California to cause cancer or reproductive harm. You will be surprised how many products have actually this label on them. And there are two things to know about Prop 65. There is, within foods, there's a loophole called naturally occurring. So what often happens is, like, within greens and vegetables, I mean, they basically soak up all the groundwater. And if the groundwater itself is contaminated, you will have high levels of lead, for example, in your foods, but you don't have to put a Prop 65 warning because you can make a case as a farmer that it is naturally occurring, right?
Yeah.
Bit of a loophole, gray area. And the other piece is, like, this typically doesn't apply to supplements. If you see that on your protein, if you see that on your supplements, there's definitely elevated levels of those. Now, I also want to caution is, like, there's obviously certain levels, and, like, because it has a warning doesn't mean necessarily you shouldn't eat it at all.
Yeah.
Because if I have the choice between eating a salad, which may have certain, you know, they just naturally occur, right? I don't want people to have got nightmares here. And something,
I know, it's such a fine line to walk.
And that's why I'm always like, you know, when it comes to this topic, I really want to give the full picture. And the full picture is that, sure, pay attention to this and maybe take some supplements that can help you actually remove those heavy metals from your bodies, like chlorella, spirulina, and all that. I think that's a really good solve, but make sure you eat healthy as well. And if you, I don't want people to develop a stress, you know, like another stress factor in their food choices. So I think if you can eat a salad, please eat the salad and don't have nightmares about, like, Prop 65. I just make that point. I think it's really important.
And that's typically what I tell people, because it is, especially in California, where it's more mandated to be labeled. You'll see that a lot on supplements. You also see it, I've seen it on buildings, where it's like, this building is under Prop 65. And it's like, oh God.
In car parks. It's in car parks.
It's everywhere, and it doesn't mean necessarily that it's in these high levels that are going to be toxic. It just means that it was in detectable levels. So again, to your point, it's not about like, oh my God, I can't be near anything that has a Prop 65 label or eat anything with this Prop 65 warning. It's about moderation, and it's about exposure, and it's about some of these are naturally occurring. So that's to kind of calm that sense of like anxiety that happens in the wellness space. It is something like to be aware of, and also to not get like, oh my God, I can never eat a piece of kale again, or turmeric, or this supplement with greens powder is like, and just be like, okay, moderation, healthy foods. How do we like incorporate that and know that there's heavy metals all around us in everything, and it's part of our lives. So our goal is to just not consume them for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Well, and that's my point. Like, if everything you consume has a Prop 65 warning, maybe it's time to revisit your supplements, your foods.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Clean Label Project, because I think it's a fascinating organization, and their mission is really to bring transparency to food and consumer product labeling by testing for industrial and environmental contaminants. So what they do is like they test for over 400 contaminants, and they're using gold label labs, like the best in class labs. And then they will give you a certificate saying this product is Clean Label certified. In our case, all of our products are. But what I really like about them is that they go around and pick product from the shelf. So it doesn't mean necessarily that you can send them your best batch. I think people have to understand that as well. When you manufacture products, it's done in batches, right? And there, you know, we test every batch, and there's third party that validates that as well. And you will always have variations, small ones, but like, you know, a brand, for example, could hack the system by just submitting their best batch, if you will. That's not the case with the Clean Label Project, because they go around like mystery shoppers, pick product, and they will just like, they will let you know if they find an issue. And I think that's a really awesome approach. And they really looked at baby foods to begin with. That's that sort of heritage, if you will. But then they widened their, I would say, area of expertise around protein powders, pet food, supplements, food and beverages, and any other household items. So it's a great organization. I do think it's a great resource for a consumer that are interested in this topic to go to their website and look at products that they have tested. So I would really recommend that.
And I love that they focus primarily on the heavy metals. So lead, arsenic, cadmium in your food, and also the plastics, like any of those smaller chain plastics that can potentially be in your food. And those are really important things that we don't want to consume. So I think that's helpful. And it's also a non-government approach to food regulation. And there can be so much in that space as well. So it's more like consumer nonprofit versus government and all of the political things that come with that. So I think it's really cool to have that as another avenue to assess and say like, oh, okay, here's another perspective on what is going in my food and just what is clean, because that's what we want to know about.
Yeah, and I think it's a great segue, because it comes down to regulation. There's a real divide across the pond, as they say, between Europe and the United States. So again, in the European Union, over 1,300 ingredients are banned from foods due to potential health risks. And there are only 300 ingredients that are allowed in food. So there's a list of what you can formulate with and things you cannot, right? So they're quite strict there. And for comparison, in the US, this list is about like 30 to 40, depending on how you, I would say, put things into different buckets. One of them, for example, is titanium dioxide. It's a whitening agent used in candies and some supplements, again, to make them look whiter, more beautiful, make them more marketable, if you will, right? Again, we never formulated with this. And, you know, at Hum, we actually can sell our products in Europe without full reformulation. So we have the same formula across the globe. It was very, I can tell you, the work we had to do to get into Germany, for example, they were very strict, and they were like claims and regulations, ingredients. I mean, it took us years, but it was really, really interesting to see. But there's a lot of conversation around right now phasing out as well. So good news is I think the US is making progress. A lot of colors like red dye number 3, that's been banned, I think, since the beginning of this year. Orange B and citrus red number 2. I wonder who branded these. I want to meet that person. I think it's fascinating.
Citrus.
But
almost
like,
sounds
and I like the
healthy.
number two, it sounds almost like a Chanel fragrance, right? So it's like it's very interesting. But it's being slowly but surely rolled out. And I think what is important to understand is the philosophy behind it, right? In the US, you have something called GRAS, which is called generally recognized as safe. And the philosophy is as following. It's like either the FDA said it's GRAS certified, so they make that assessment, or there's something that is called self-GRAS. And self-GRAS is like the organization that wants to include this ingredient, certifies and says, like, here's the evidence that we have looked at. We consider this as safe. So therefore, we decided this is GRAS, right? And this, I think, is a very important distinction between the two continents, because on the one hand, you're relying on someone who has a vested interest in certifying something as safe, versus on the other side of the Atlantic, you have an independent, I would say somewhat independent, because lobbying, it doesn't matter where you are, there's always like an element of lobbying, right? And a lot of research can be put to the forefront, and other research can be buried, if you will, in that process. But generally speaking, the philosophy is like, it's the organization's responsibility to certify something as safe, versus in Europe, it's like a question of the European Union making that decision.
Yeah. And so, I like their perspective, like to kind of think about it. When I think about it simply, it's like European is better safe than sorry. And here it's kind of like, well, we need more research. And there's a little bit more of like that hesitation to just, you know, take things out is kind of how I see in those comparisons. And I mean, even just the word like generally recognized as safe, I'm like, generally? Is that okay? Like just mostly, like to, I don't know, when we're going to say, is that something I should put in my body? Yes or no. I know there's a lot of gray area, whereas like for some people it can be more inflammatory, for other people it can't, but it's interesting that it's like, you know, this not, it doesn't seem like it's a very strong, it's like probably it's okay.
Yeah. And look, I think we're making progress, and but just to understand the scale of things, like 1 in 5 packaged goods has some form of like synthetic dye. So
I know they put out a research study from the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, which is my professional organization, looking at things. They're like things you wouldn't even expect to have food dyes, like hot dog buns and taco shells, and just like something you wouldn't be like, oh, let me check and see if this has a food dye. So I think this is an important initiative to take those things out. And like, because to me, it's like, why do you need it for aesthetics?
Yeah, I always say, when in doubt, keep it out. Honestly,
it's a good one.
Simple as that. Just repeat that mantra.
Yeah,
honestly.
That's a good
and
mantra.
What I find shocking is so that's 20% on average. But when you look at products marketed to children, that number goes up from 20% to 28%. So you can see, and you know, there are legit questions around like, what is this doing for the brain development of young kids, right? And young adults. So definitely something to look into. Again, I don't want to start a conspiracy here and all this, but like, I mean, people who are interested in the topic, I mean, there's definitely something like the foods that are given to children, in my opinion, is definitely something to look at, because they are, you know.
Yeah, there's studies that show an uptick in ADHD type symptoms with these food dyes, which is why I think now we're seeing that movement towards removing them. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, when I was like a dietitian being like, don't eat food dyes, and people are like, you're a conspiracy theorist, it's not bad for you. That was a different world. And now we're kind of seeing that trend towards the science catching up and saying like, well, actually there are instances where we're seeing it's causing cancer in animal studies, or it is showing an uptick in these really energized behavior patterns and inability to focus and just things in children. So we are measuring that. And I think it's there. So at this point in time, I'm like, it's not a conspiracy theory at all. There is data behind it, and we're moving to take those things out. So it's really, for me, it's really exciting to see that movement start to happen.
I agree. And like, having been like, I sold one of my companies to a large organization, and I'm not going to mention any names, but like, then having worked in that world, and I was just questioning some of the ingredients that are being used, and even raising the question,
yeah,
like you were, it was not allowed to talk about a topic, right? So that was like a big no-no. So I do think we're making good progress, but let's talk about some of the ingredients that are still permissible. And I can't even pronounce them, not even with my notes in front of me here. But
Yeah.
let's go through this one. Can you pronounce it? Neonicotinoid pesticides. Now that actually I learned about because I love my gardening. I love my bees and all this. I wasn't aware of this, but one of the fertilizers, which I loved actually, it did really well for my roses, had that ingredient that was just been banned from California. So it's banned in California, I believe, certain parts of Florida, where, you know, typically states where you have higher agricultural industries, and obviously healthy bee populations are important, right? Also for the GDP of that state. But that's one of those. It's, you find it in most states. I would say 5 states have banned it, but like 45 have not. So that's still there.
Yeah.
We spoke about on another podcast about bread and how bread in a croissant in Europe can be more digestible. This one here is a good one.
Yes.
Potassium bromate.
Yes.
You know what that is?
Yeah. So that's put to strengthen dough in baked goods and to preserve it so it can stay on the shelf longer. And that's been found to be a carcinogen. And so I think, again, like going back to that idea of why can I eat something in the US or not eat something in the US and then eat it in Europe? It's because we're seeing a decrease in these types of chemicals where we still have those in the US. Like we want to, you know, extend shelf life, which I understand from a manufacturer perspective. Like if you can sell something for 2 weeks longer, then of course that's going to impact the bottom line. But if you're doing that at the cost of our health, then no, that's not appropriate in my opinion.
Totally. Brominated vegetable oil, BVO. I'm
yeah,
sure that's something you talk about a lot in your practice, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's another like emulsifier. So these are things that, again, are like trying to keep things together and to keep that texture really. Mm. Like salad dressings will have emulsifiers to like keep it all consistent throughout, because there's, you know, back to aesthetics, it's like if it's separated, people aren't going to want to buy it. And maybe that's true. Maybe that is a consumer kind of choice. But to me, it's like, you know, we just educate on like things are going to separate and it's okay. You can shake it, you can stir it, but you don't need to have something that is been studied to have neurological issues in your food if we can remove it. Like what you said, like when in doubt, like we don't need that.
Another one, acetylcarbonamide, ADA, that is something you find in flour again. So again, making probably its way back into our breads. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, it's like, when did we start eating solely for aesthetics? Like, why does our white bread need to be like bleach white? I don't understand. So, and it's probably a consumer preference where it's like, oh, well, this is probably better for me if it's pure white, where it's not, because we're obtaining that through chemicals.
Yeah, and just on that topic, I grew up in Germany, and you can tell by my accent, I obviously have a foreign accent, but they have like 1,400 varieties of bread. It's absolutely delicious. If you ever find yourself in Germany, go to a bakery, and they have all these dark breads and like with like different
It's so
grains.
Good. Even in
it's
France, they have,
lovely.
What are they? I'm not going to say it right. I'm going to butcher
Le pain
it.
De campagne, they call it, the dark
it's
one.
It's like, there's just, yeah, it's beautiful. And there's color varieties and texture varieties.
Totally.
And it's like, that's how we want to eat. We don't want to have this like bleached, like everything's clean and everything's perfect. That's not what our food is meant to be.
It's almost like bread has turned into Barbie doll, where it has the perfect proportions and it's like a certain shape and all that kind of stuff. And a certain color and all this. This one's staying on the baked goods here. Propyl paraben. Do you know about this one? That's a preservative.
Preservative, yeah. So again,
and snack bars, yeah.
And you know what's interesting? There's a company that I loved that was just recently bought by Pepsi, and they changed their ingredients. And like, they didn't say anything, still same packaging. But if you look at the ingredients, they're different than they were pre being purchased, and they have more preservatives in them. So it's just fascinating. And it was one thing I was like, oh man, if you don't eat this quick, it gets moldy. And we just would be like, okay, well, we got to consume it. And I think that's not a bad thing. If our food gets moldy, that's intended to be moldy, right? Like,
well, I think this is also another fascinating thing is like, if you can keep foods for like weeks and weeks, just
that's always like,
sitting at room temperature, it still looks perfect. It's like, what's going on here, right? To your point, you know, make sure it has like a true shelf life. And this one, and I'm going to end this list here because I could go on for hours and we're already like getting well over time here. Recombinant bovine growth hormone, RBGH. Do you know anything about that one?
Yeah, this was a hot topic. Maybe like 5, 6 years ago, maybe 10 years. I don't know time anymore. But this was kind of a big conversation that we had in the dietetic community as well, where can the hormones that are given to cows actually be transferred in their milk? And as consumers, we were saying, we don't want that in our milk. We don't want that in our food, to have these growth hormones that are given to cows then process and be transferred to our bodies. And they're finding that it can be linked to cancer. So that was something, actually, when you look, it was very much a consumer driven buying choice, where it was when people were putting this like no RBH or RBGH in our milk, there was more purchasing done for those products. So that was an interesting one to see, because it was very much consumer driven, which I thought was cool.
Well, look, I think we could go on and on here. I think just to summarize, it's basically, you know, I think there's a sort of like more of a risk averse approach in certain countries versus a bit more risk tolerant approach here. Good news is that things are being phased out. But like, just to summarize what we've talked about, like within, you know, the US, the burden is really with the manufacturer to prove it's safe, whereas in Europe, they actually establish a list and then circulate that list across member states. The banned ingredient count is a handful here in the US, where it is 1,300 in Europe. In terms of labeling, there is no such thing as a requirement to label dyes, artificial dyes, whereas that is the case in Europe as well. And then when it comes to sort of nanoparticle regulation, there is no such thing as a formal regulation around certain ingredients like titanium dioxide. Again, these ingredients are banned. And then last but not least, GMO, which is a different topic, I would say, because obviously this is more about impact on biodiversity. I wouldn't argue that non-GMO food is better from a nutrient profile. But what I would argue is, if you look at the whole topic around GMOs, and that's a conversation for another day, the impact it has on the environment, but also on like industries where farmers are being forced, for example, to use certain crops to cultivate their land. And that really creates like some monopolies within agriculture, which I don't think are healthy. Plus, you want to have biodiversity, you know, even with agriculture. And it does have an impact on like, you know, other ecosystems. So I'm a huge fan of GMO transparency.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should have the choice, right? Like the whole thing is education, transparency. Like,
I agree.
Let us know that it's there. Let us know that that's what this is, so that as a consumer, you can choose based on education and research that we're doing. And, you know, that's why we have these conversations, to provide more education. But then ultimately, it's up to each individual person to say, like, what feels right for me, because it is controversial.
It is controversial, and quite frankly, you really have to pay attention to the label and look at the ingredient list, as we earlier mentioned, and look out for these red flags, and just do your research. And obviously, if you have a question on this topic, just drop us a comment below. We're happy to help as well. Yeah. We feel really strongly about it, and we could go on for hours, but I have to wrap things up a little bit here. So let's move on to our next segment, which is Well Yes and Well No. I will start this week, and my Well Yes is on the topic of heavy metals and contamination, chlorella and spirulina in your daily routine. I'm a huge fan. Why do I like them? And we have them in my favorite product at Harm Daily Cleanse. They actually bind those heavy metals, and then you basically poop them out. It's like an internal sponge that you take. They're also very rich in micronutrients, so very healthy on that front. But I cannot recommend enough green algae like chlorella and spirulina, because they're literally powerhouses, nutrient rich, help you detoxify. So big fan of those. And then my Well No is, like, just because it's called safe, it doesn't mean it has to be safe. I do think we need to really find better ways of like articulating. And to your point, generally recognized as safe doesn't mean necessarily it is safe. So I think there needs to be a bit more work to be done. And the good news is we're well on our way to making some positive improvements here. But how about you, Sarah? What are your weeklies, Well Yeses and Well Nos?
Well, we've talked about heavy metals and exposure and finding it in foods. I always think about personalized testing. And so this one comes up for me a lot is these hair and mineral tests that you can get done where
Interesting.
you can literally get your hair tested and they can say, this is, you know, you have heavy metals based on your hair. And that for me is a well no. I don't think there's enough evidence to say that if you have lead, high levels of lead in your hair, it directly translate to what's in your bloodstream. So that just, that's a well no. And then our whole conversation about this imperfect food made me think of imperfect produce.
I absolutely love
that. Yeah.
Yes,
so I love that. That's a big well yes. And essentially what they're doing is they're taking all of the like misshapen apples and the misshapen avocados and the carrots that are fatter than they are long that they throw away. And they say, well, this isn't meeting our, you know, our visual standards of what an apple should look like. And they're taking all that and selling it to people at a more reasonable price. And I think that is a really beautiful initiative.
Love it. All right, let's move on to our final segment, which is our RD Rapid Fire. And this topic is about clean. Now, again, you know how this goes. Rate something on a scale from 1 to 10 or 0, if you will, if it's absolutely ghastly. So let's start with non-GMO verified.
9.
Organic.
8.
Clean label project.
9.
Prop 65.
5.
Regenerative farming.
10.
Gluten-free.
9.
Grass-fed.
8.
Free-range.
6.
And upcycled. upcycled foods. I think that's an interesting one. And just for those who don't understand, don't know the term, it's about like taking parts of the foods that are not being used in, say, when you make wine, often what happens to the skin of the grapes that's not used in the wine, but it's used in skincare because you can extract really micronutrient-rich oils from those, or it could be in the seeds as well. And then that is being used in the cosmetics industry, for example. Just want to mention that. What's your perspective around this? For
a 10. I love reusing. I love recycling. I love when you can take something that would be waste and turn it into something that's beneficial. So 10 out of 10.
Great. And I hope I'm not going to burst your bubble with what I'm about to say. It's a little bit controversial, but there is a bit of a tension sometimes between clean and organic because something is organic doesn't mean necessarily that it's clean. It really comes down to the water that's being used for the agriculture, for example. And if that water is heavily contaminated, as a result, you'll find those heavy metals will make their way into those veggies. Or you find them in fish as well, of course, we know that, right? So I just want to make sure people know that too, but I don't want to spook people out either. And so just to be clear on this one. Well, listen, this wraps up this week's episode. Thank you so much, Sarah, for joining me on this one.
Thank you.
And all the passion you brought to it. And I see you soon. And for those of you who enjoyed this episode, please give us a like. It takes really a lot of work to produce each of these episodes. And on that note, I want to say a massive thank you to our producer, Brooke, and also our production assistant, Fatima, for making this happen. And again, spread the love, follow us, comment with questions. We're listening, and I see you next week.